Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, How the British Invented Communism and Blamed It on the Jews, by Richard Poe positions itself as a provocative reassessment of how modern political narratives are manufactured and exported. Using a polemical, investigative style, the book argues that key strands of revolutionary ideology and anti-revolutionary counter-propaganda were shaped within British political, intelligence, and media ecosystems, then projected outward as if they were foreign infections. The title signals a dual emphasis first, a claim that British interests helped cultivate or steer communist currents for strategic ends second, that the resulting turmoil was rhetorically displaced onto Jews through conspiracy frameworks that hardened into modern political anti-Semitism. Rather than treating communism and anti-Semitic agitation as separate histories, Poe links them as mutually reinforcing story's ideology as a tool and scapegoating as a cover. The book is written for readers who want a big-picture synthesis that challenges conventional origin stories and invites scrutiny of who benefits when blame is redirected. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, communism as a managed narrative rather than a spontaneous movement. A central idea presented is that communism, in practice, can be understood not only as an ideological uprising from below, but also as something cultivated, steered, or strategically tolerated by powerful institutions. The book frames Britain as a key node in this process, emphasizing the role of elite interests in shaping public understanding of revolution and counter-revolution. In this reading, ideology becomes a lever by influencing leaders, factions, and information channels. A state can amplify certain outcomes while suppressing others, all while maintaining plausible deniability. The argument also reframes familiar debates about whether communism spread because it solved social problems or because it was exported and financed. Poe's approach pushes the reader to ask operational questions: who had access to communication lines, who could move money across borders, who controlled press distribution, and who had incentives to keep conflicts simmering rather than resolved. By treating political movements as ecosystems that can be curated, the book challenges simplistic explanations that rely solely on economic distress or charismatic theorists. The broader takeaway is methodological to understand mass movements, follow the infrastructure of influence, not just the manifestos. Secondly, British power, geopolitics, and the use of ideological proxies. The book places British strategy at the center of a geopolitical chessboard where rival empires and emerging nation-states competed over trade routes, resources, and political alignments. Within this framework, ideological proxies matter because they can destabilize adversaries, fracture coalitions, and create pretexts for intervention. Poe's thesis suggests that supporting, infiltrating, or manipulating revolutionary networks could serve imperial objectives even when the ideology itself was publicly denounced. This creates a useful paradox. A government can condemn communism in speeches while benefiting from its disruptive effects abroad. The narrative invites readers to view intelligence activity, diplomatic maneuvering, and media messaging as interconnected tools, with ideology functioning as the public-facing story that masks operational goals. It also highlights how long-running institutions can outlast party politics, meaning a consistent strategic posture may persist across changing administrations. From this angle, communism is not treated as a monolith, but as a set of factions that could be played against one another or against local nationalists. The topic underscores a broader lesson in political analysis. When great powers compete, they frequently weaponize ideas, and the most visible ideology is not always the one truly in control of events. Thirdly, scapegoating Jews as a political technology of deflection. The second half of the title points to a recurring historical pattern: when complex systems fail or when covert projects need concealment, blame is displaced onto a vulnerable, recognizable outgroup. The book argues that anti-Semitic narratives were useful because they offered a simple, emotionally satisfying explanation for disorienting social change. By casting Jews as secret masterminds behind revolution, finance, or cultural decline, propagandists could unify anxious audiences and redirect anger away from governments, elites, or institutions that might have had real influence. Poe treats this not as an accidental prejudice, but as a repeatable political technology. A conspiracy frame is especially effective because it is unfalsifiable to believers. Lack of evidence becomes evidence of cover-up. The alleged link between Jews and communism also serves an additional purpose. According to the book's logic, it merges fear of economic upheaval with ethnic hatred, producing a stronger mobilizing force than either alone. This topic encourages readers to notice how scapegoats are selected and standardized, how tropes travel across borders, and how they become embedded in both popular culture and political rhetoric. The practical implication is vigilance. Whenever a movement claims a hidden ethnic cabal controls everything, it is usually masking simpler interests and power dynamics. Fourthly, information warfare pamphlets, press, intelligence, and the manufacture of belief. Another major emphasis is how belief is manufactured through coordinated messaging. The book draws attention to the role of media ecosystems, rumor networks, and strategically planted narratives in turning fringe theories into accepted common sense. In the historical setting implied by the book's theme, pamphlets, newspapers, salons, and later mass circulation outlets act as accelerants for political mythmaking. Poe's argument encourages the reader to connect propaganda with operational needs. Stories about revolutionary threats can justify crackdowns. Stories about foreign plots can justify war. And stories about ethnic conspiracies can justify repression while deflecting scrutiny from state actors. This topic also reinforces that information warfare does not require total control. It requires shaping what seems plausible and what seems unthinkable. Repetition, selective evidence, and emotional triggers do much of the work. The book's broader lens invites comparison to modern dynamics platform algorithms. Partisan media and influencer networks can perform similar functions, even when no single director is obvious. By highlighting how narratives are seeded and sustained, the book pushes readers to adopt a more forensic approach to political claims. Instead of asking only whether a story sounds right, it suggests asking who benefits if it is believed, and what alternative explanations are being crowded out. Lastly, reading history against the grain, accountability, motives, and missing incentives, the book ultimately asks readers to revise how they assign causality in history. Rather than treating major ideological events as inevitable or purely grassroots, it urges an incentives-based audit identify the actors with capacity, motive, and opportunity to steer outcomes, then examine how public explanations may function as camouflage. Poe's framing encourages skepticism toward tidy origin stories that flatter nations or demonize outsiders, especially when those stories produce convenient moral clarity. A key implication is that accountability often fails when blame is outsourced to abstractions or ethnic caricatures. If communism becomes a foreign contagion and Jews become the puppet masters, then concrete institutions escape scrutiny and lessons go unlearned. This topic also emphasizes a practical skill for readers triangulating sources, distinguishing evidence from interpretation, and noticing when a narrative relies on emotional certainty rather than verifiable chains of action. Even for readers who contest the book's conclusions, the approach can be instructive because it prioritizes questions that standard political histories sometimes downplay, such as logistical support, financial channels, and gatekeepers of information. The takeaway is a framework for critical inquiry: track incentives, map networks, and treat scapegoating as a sign that the real story may involve more ordinary forms of power. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who enjoy revisionist history, geopolitical intrigue, and deep dives into propaganda, especially those interested in how narratives about communism and anti-Semitism were constructed and circulated. It will also appeal to readers who want to understand conspiracy thinking not as a quirky fringe habit, but as a strategic tool that can be weaponized to protect institutions and redirect public anger. The practical benefit is learning to analyze political stories with sharper questions: who gains from a specific explanation, what infrastructure spread it, and what alternative suspects are being conveniently ignored. That mindset can improve how readers evaluate modern headlines, online claims, and ideological campaigns in their own lives. Compared with many books that treat communism as an isolated ideological phenomenon or anti-Semitism as a separate social pathology, Poe's value proposition is synthesis. By linking the management of revolutionary narratives with the deliberate blaming of Jews, the book offers a single framework for understanding how power can hide behind moral panics. Whether readers agree with every contention or not, it is worth buying if you want a challenging argument that presses beyond textbook summaries and forces a more forensic look at motive, capability, and messaging. It aims to provoke scrutiny of the story behind the story, which few mainstream treatments prioritize. If you would like to support Richard Poe, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.